It would be a waltz, but eh?
On goes Paul. People might yet win it here for Wolves. Flash in the shot. What a goal!
Good evening, everyone. Good morning. If you're listening tomorrow on your commute to work, I'm your host, Little Dan, on tonight's Wolves Fancast Match Reaction Show. After yesterday's 2-0 home defeat at home to Arsenal, no win in six now for Wolves, but it's not for the lack of trying. On tonight's show, I've got with me Stu, Jeffo and Ed. Just going to do a quick little bit of housekeeping before we start digressing on last night's defeat. We revealed in the last week or so that we'll be doing another charity football match at Molineux on Friday the 24th of May on behalf of the mental health charity Mind. If you could help us by donating, it'd be a great cause. And our support is always ever long with Mind. We've done a lot of things with them in the past, and it's our number one charity to go to. We're hoping to do a couple of mental health episodes in the lead up to the event. So if you can help, the website is www.justgiving.com/page/WolvesFancastCCC24, because that's the content creators cup 2024. So I'll just repeat again, justgiving.com/page/WolvesFancastCCC24. Thanks for joining us, whether you're listening afterwards live or live on YouTube, Twitter, wherever. Thanks for joining us on the Wolves Fancast. Follow us at Wolves Fancast across all social media. It was a tough one yesterday. We looked at the lineup, pre-match. Wangi Cham made his way back into the starting 11, Stu. Tuanda Torreira was given a run out from the start. But it was pretty much I've got it down as a 5-2-2-1 there, because João Gomes seemed to be given the poison chalice of this hybrid role that Gary O'Neill's created. But looking at that lineup, what were your sort of feelings going to the match? Because recently, Stu, you can admit that whatever team we've put out, you've literally just panned us before we've even kicked the ball. So what was your feelings looking at that lineup yesterday?
Well, no, so I didn't comment yesterday when it came out. I just said, stayed silent when the whole Bambi route. I didn't think we'd get panned as much as people thought. I thought it might have been 3 or 4 rather than 6 or 7, like people were suggesting in the week. It is what it is, ain't we? I mean, I didn't expect Wang to start. Even though he'd said he had about 45 minutes in him, I thought he'd save him for the second half if we were in the game. João Gomes playing there, it's just a body, isn't it, at this point? We've got no one else, so one of you is going to have to sacrifice yourself this week. But by doing that, we had the emergence of Bubi Traore again out of nowhere. So there's at least that positive from me. And João and Tuanda, let's just keep it at that name before anyone gets confused and people go mad.
Chihuahua. that what? Twitter spat today about the pronunciation of Tuanda Torreira's surname is just another chapter in the bonkers world that is all social media. It's, yeah. What we'll carry on, Stu, with what you were saying. Let's move away from that conversation.
I mean, I think when you've had a day like today, and that's not even the most mental thing to have come out of Twitter/X today, I mean, like Danny's put in the comments, that we are living in an upside down world with you on the reaction and Rich on the preview. But yeah, I thought Tuanda did really well yesterday. I mean, I didn't think he was anywhere near first team quality in the kind of brief showings that we said. And it's fair, Gary O'Neill's kind of said that it's been unfair on him to come off the subs bench and to expect anything, which is a fair point. But looking at that, I thought, yeah, it's going to be backs to the wall. Hugo Bueno's back in where he doesn't really want to be playing him anyway. Doherty's back on his preferred side, the jog father that he is. So I just expected keep the numbers down, just be solid and compact and maybe nick a corner here and there. And what we got was not that. So relatively happy.
based on Arsenal going out midweek to Bayern, Ed, what where were your sort of optimism levels when that lineup came out yesterday?
Well, initially it was, oh no, Martinelli's against Doherty and we're in for a long night. And then it was Trossard and I kind of fluctuated. But Arsenal, although I'm not pandering to the Bottlers banter club kind of nonsense that people throw around, they don't strike me as a team that kind of come back and like paced the next team that they play. So I didn't think that we were going to win. But I also didn't think that they were going to come and sort of batter us the way I think a lot of people did. That lineup for me smacked of a good old Mick McCarthy backs to the wall Premier League game is what I was expecting, where we were kind of, like Stu just said, try and hit something on the break or you know, grab a corner, grab a free kick and get a dead ball into the box. I was happy to see Traore back, happy to see Towanda get a run out from the start, because I think he was kind of thrown under the bus a little bit with some of the substitute appearances like Gary O'Neill talked about. But my biggest concern, my biggest worry was Doherty on the right. I think he seems to be the only right back that is better going, has completely and utterly dropped off defensively, but his forward runs are still incredible. I don't quite know what he offers. I'm still banging the drum for him to play up front till the end of the season.
It's going to have to be done at some point. Gary O'Neill's running out of options now. It's only a matter of time before the MD9 gets that role that he's earned, that goal scoring record since that promotion season. He's earned at least one game up front. Might come against Luton next week, because we were all sort of within the WhatsApp group going into that Luton game really pessimistic, knowing that Luton need the points. I wouldn't even say we're on the beach. We're just walking wounded. It's like an episode of The Walking Dead. It's just like, it's tough. Someone's commented in 123 North Street in the comments. Proud of the lads so far this season. Really sorry for Gary O'Neill, let down by Jeff Sheehan. Fowson, Stu's got very clear opinions on where Fowson have let us down, where Fowson could still put money in if they really want to. And it's hard to disagree with the situation. That January transfer window, I keep hammering the drum. We let Adama Traore go to Barcelona with a loan, with an option to buy. Why weren't we in the market for a good loan with an option to buy? We could have offered someone a high value transfer fee like Barca did. No, Barcelona was never going to pay £30 million for Adama Traore, right? Unless he did stupid numbers. We got sucked in by a deal. It's another case of poor recruitment at Molineux. But I still think we should have been doing something in the January transfer window. 100% agree with Gary O'Neill letting Fabio Silva and Sasha Kolasic go out. No problem with that. But the negligence to not have someone literally in a shirt unveiled on Twitter before you let both of them go out on loan is just, it's maniacal for me. I'll bring you in, Jeffo. Ask the same sort of question like I did to Ed. Your optimism levels looking at that lineup based on Arsenal going out midweek to Bayern?
Yeah, it's just how everyone else felt, to be honest. I mean, it was more preparing for, you know, backs to the wall and just trying to get something out of the game. It just felt like the way it was set up, we were trying to play for damage limitation and just try and not concede in 60, 70 minutes and try and snatch something. And that's the sort of, you know, the quality of the players that you got out there, you think you should be able to do something like that. But it's just the level of the player that you've got out there and the style. You've just got a lot of defensive players, so it's just set up to not concede, really.
You're muted.
You're on mute, mate.
You're on mute, Danny boy.
I know, guys. But thanks for the reminder. It was always going to be a tough game, even with Arsenal having the sort of the aftermath of two back-to-back defeats, the emotional weight that was weighed upon them after going out to Bayern. They spent a lot of effort into the Champions League this year. I think when they got past Porto on penalties, they might have started sniffing that. It might have been their year, but Bayern are still a good side, even though they've massively struggled in the Bundesliga this season. But without sort of being overly negative, I think I was in the group of people that was really pessimistic last night. I think, and I've been really harsh on Tuana Torreira in our WhatsApp group. I'll be public with it. I don't feel he's anywhere near Premier League level, but I've been really harsh on him because, like you've mentioned, what Gary O'Neill's mentioned, having fleeting moments off the subs bench isn't going to be good for him, being asked to play in roles that he's not predominantly played in for the under-23. So it was tough. I said if it was 3-0 at half-time, I was going, and I'll rarely leave a game early. It's just not in my DNA. I usually tend to stay till the end just to boo him off, because I've paid my money to boo him off if I'm going to be. But this Wolves team has still this season not put in a performance that has made me feel a booing has been warranted. And the first half, although Arsenal, you know, pressed us back into our own half a lot of the time, created a lot of half chances, I thought we held our own to a degree. And the chance for João Gomes, Stuart, 0-0, which Raya gets a good hand on and hits the woodwork, was probably our main moment of the game, really.
Yeah, I didn't even realise until I got back in the car afterwards, well, on the bus back after the session, that he'd saved that. I thought it was just a great shot that he hit the inside of the post. So was that our only shot on target? I presume it was. But, oh, there we are.
Yeah, the XG was not great. Wolves 0.162, Arsenal's 1.66. If you look to the right of the screen there, we pretty much had two shots in Arsenal's box the entire game. The one chance with João Gomes, which ended up with the woodwork, and the second one was Lamina's cutting with a left foot, which Raya comfortably saved. All the rest of the shots were way outside the box, including one of... You talked about how well Boubacar Traoré played, but his one shot was so chaotic. That was the Boubacar Traoré that I've been sort of ingrained with. But over the 90 minutes, Ed, what was your opinion on Boubacar Traoré?
I think he's the footballer that knows what he is, right? And his job is to go and get the ball back, sniff it out, and then give it to someone who can play football. And I don't think that's necessarily a bad thing. He gets around the pitch. He's, you know, he's got that kind of languid, lanky style that I quite like him. I think he worked quite well in the middle in terms of, like I said, his job is to literally just get the ball back, isn't it? And I think he can fill in gaps quite well. He can catch up with play quite quickly as well. I think he's been needing a start for the last few weeks just to give him a go, because what have we got to lose now? Gary O'Neill needs to see what some of these fringe players can do, because in the summer we're hoping for some kind of change in the squad. And I think Boubacar Traoré, there's a game for players like that. And I think games when you're not going to dominate the ball, and granted we never really want to, he's perfect for those types of games, because ideally next year it will be play him in a game where you'll go and get him the ball, he'll go and get the ball and give it to someone like Tommy Doyle, who can spray the passes around, you know, hopefully with another year's football under his belt and maturing. I thought he was quite good, and I just think he should just keep that one Leeds goal that he scored and never shoot again. Just he's probably the one player I do want to pass sideways, which I think we're quite good at.
It's a good point, that is, though, because you said he needed to start. We've got four midfielders and we've only ever used three. Mm-hmm. And it is quite bizarre why he's never been included until needs must.
I thought he played really well last night. I thought he was a good sort of foil for Tommy Doyle at times. We managed to beat Arsenal's press a few times in the first half, but that lack of sort of Neto and Cunha was... We were literally playing with one leg time behind our back. And I mean, from a gymnastic point of view, that seems really difficult, never mind on a football pitch. I mean, I'm 37 with bad hips now. Tying one leg behind my back would ruin me now. But Arsenal, they did create a lot of chances. But don't really remember Jose Sarr having many non-routine saves, difficult saves to make in that first. I think Havertz had a bit of a half chance left foot in the first opening minutes, but everything tended to be dragged wide, didn't it? I think Declan Rice had one on the edge of the box in the first half, which I think if it would have been on target, I think Jose Sarr would have relatively got there comfortably. But the opening goal, Jeffo, ball gets sort of thrown into the box. For me, there was a bit of a clamour for a call for a foul on Doherty in that build-up. For me, I just thought Doherty was weak as piss. What was your opinion on the goal? And because we all know Leandro Trossard he never meant that. It's just a complete slice of the ball. He's like a toe bunt on a playground, and luckily for them, that's lucky you get when you're in a title race. But what was your opinion on that sort of that Doherty situation?
Yeah, I'm with you. I mean, he should do a lot better. At the end of the day, he's got to fight to try and win that ball. And in the last few weeks, we haven't really seen that sort of quality that he's shown in the past, where he's been a tenacious fighter on the pitch and he's wanted to be involved and wanted to show strength and sort of where he is now in his career. He should be one of those people who is showing that sort of quality, because he should be a leader on the pitch, because he has that much experience in terms of football. He should be the one who's been taking the game sort of by the scruff of the neck, sort of, you know, to use a cliche sort of thing. He's the one who should be dragging the players forward and showing the players the way to do things, and sometimes doing things dirty and maybe playing for a foul there, or showing strength and maybe doing it a dirty way. But it's not the wrong way for a club like us. We need to be doing things in a way that, you know, benefits us. And like, as you say, to be as strong as Pierce, you know, as weak as Pierce, sorry, is pathetic. Is somebody who's played a decade of top level football at this club. You know, he's been here for, you know, he might have left for like a short period, but let's say he's been here for a decade. To do that in a Wolves shirt is pathetic, really. And he should really be disappointed in himself. With Trossard's goal, you know, it's a Travella. It could go anywhere. You know, he's lucky. He's very lucky. But, you know, it looks nice. It'll look good on cameras for years to come.
Oh, sorry, guys. It was so deflating going 1-0 down that close to half time, Stu. But what positives did you take from that first half?
That we weren't about five down. I think the fact that no one hid, did they? No one hid, and you couldn't blame them for that. If they had gone hiding, no one did want the ball, or no one wanted to try anything really, under the circumstances and what everyone's been dealt now. It would have been easy to collapse, and to defend like they did. And again, Kilman has had a bad few weeks by his own standards, and without an actual leader next to him in Greg Dawson, he's started to struggle a little bit. Yesterday, I thought he was great. I thought there was times yesterday where he was back to almost his best. There was only odd one or two, obviously. And when you're getting bombarded like that, you are going to let one or two slip through, but I think you summed it up perfectly, saying that Saar had nothing really devastating to try and throw himself at when everything was routine, well, within routine reach, certain, let's say that, because he has been vulnerable as well in the last few weeks with a few mental blips and Saarisms. But then you look at that, the thing, I mean, the Doherty thing, like Jafo said, it's terrible, but especially literally a week after what happened last with Semedo, and you think you've just got to be stronger in the box. I don't know what they're doing. Why are they pussyfooting around with things like this, where you know that we're not going to get decisions against us anyway, for whatever reason. So just be strong in the box. That's all you got to do. And for someone like that, it's a bad look. But again, it's a fluke. It's a fluke that does us again. And it's just, when you're down on your luck like we are at the minute, then things happen. So I wasn't like walking down the stairs deflated, or I was quite pleased, which is a really weird feeling to have.
What positive did you take from that first half? So I know when I went down to speak to my mates in the concourse at halftime, I think the one comment that stood out in that sort of 15-minute break was my one mate saying that it felt like a Championship side against a Premier League side in an FA Cup game. We defended well, we huffed and puffed, but we never really had enough quality to really trouble us. I feel like us on the back of that midweek game abroad, and that they possibly could have went for a couple more goals if they really wanted to.
Yeah, I don't think Arsenal got out of probably second gear for most of the night, but I think that's a little harsh, that comment, to be honest, because when you look at the two teams on paper, that they aren't comparable. Realistically, we keep saying it every week, we have a child up front that's trying to learn how to play in the Premier League. We've got our backup right back. We've got, I think, just quickly on the Trossard goal, I also think Santiago Bueno can be quicker to cover, to come over as well, to give some kind of help. Jesus is on the floor for a long time with, and is able to squirm the ball over to Trossard to run. I think you were very kind, Jafo, to call that a Travellera. That's definitely a topo. but I don't think it was kind of... I think the bravery was what I want to take away from it. I think, like Stu just talked about, we didn't ever go to lumping it upfield and just letting them come at us again. We still tried to, whether or not you like the playing out from the back, we still stuck to that principle of playing our football. Jure was actually being passed to this week, whereas I think in recent weeks he hasn't been. You know, they haven't been passing to the kids. Some of the more senior players have been bypassing them and going long. I thought it was a brave performance from a team where maybe it's easy to be brave when you know you're not going to finish anywhere below 13th, and you know there's a potential for more and more off-field incidents to take teams down rather than performances on the pitch. But I think maybe you could argue it's easy to be brave, but I was quite heartened by that performance. I didn't think it was a performance of a team where we were backs to the wall. We were never going to cause them any trouble. I just think we were only one or two of our first teamers away from giving them more than a good game and maybe trying to push them to go through the gears. I wasn't overly impressed by Arsenal. I think only really Declan Rice really impressed me last night, to be perfectly honest.
His ball carrying from deep was impressive a couple of times, I found. But like you said, for a team that's, are they top of the league today at the moment? I think they are on goal difference, aren't they? They're not a, it's not been one of the standout performances at Molineux this season that I've come across. It's a fair point that you mentioned just a minute, Ed, which I hadn't really considered in regards to the senior players of this squad. Not, I thought on mute against you then.
No, I was just thinking myself, they're on goal difference, at the right 8 points better off than Liverpool, just for clarity, on top of the league.
Yeah, you mentioned about the senior players not really trusting in the young members, and we've sort of skirted across this recently, but the senior members have been Sarabia and Lamina, haven't they?
Yeah.
And ironically, those were on the bench last night.
Neither of them played, yeah.
And the youngsters did seem to play with a bit more of a... an assurance, which they probably hadn't had in recent times. That Torreira looked competent on the ball for me. I said in our WhatsApp group last night that in the past, I've been a bit sort of harsh on him, but he did all the basics right for me last night. I thought he put in a decent performance. I think he's gave Gary O'Neill a bit of food for thought on being used again in the future, because he showed against a really strong Arsenal side that he's willing to mix it, didn't give the ball away sloppily, all that from what I remember. I thought Hugo Bueno did really well against Bukayo Saka last night in previous games when Saka tore him apart. That 5-0 at the Emirates last season, it would have scarred Hugo Bueno for a long time. I thought defensively, as a unit, and Hugo Bueno in particular, I thought he did really well against Saka last night. Jeffo, what was your feelings on Hugo Bueno?
It's something that we've missed for a long, long time. And last season, we saw a lot of quality from him. And I've said in previous weeks, when we've talked about him, that he's the only player who seems to have regressed under O'Neill. And you look where he is now compared to what the performances we're putting in. He's one who you know, he should be relishing what's going on with Art Nuri. He should be relishing the challenge of being behind someone who can push him every week. You know, he has to fight for that shirt. If Art Nuri's not fit, he's got to be pushing himself every week and training to try and get there and try and steal that shirt back. And we just haven't seen that sort of drive from him. We haven't seen that quality when he's been involved in games. So to see sort of a decent level come back, I mean, it's not perfect, and it's certainly not the level that he was even last season, but it was getting towards it. And that's the thing, is that we're seeing even him coming up to that level is good. And it fills us with a little bit more confidence that we've got another player there who's going to increase in value, and somebody who, if Ike Nuri does leave in the summer, that we have got a ready-made left-back ready to go. Because that's what we need. We need people to step up if we do sell players in the summer.
It's a good point that you've made there in regards to the regression of Hugo Bueno. Because when Lopetegui came in, I thought he was going to steal on him and march ahead with that left wing position, left wing back position. He scored the winner in Lopetegui's first pre-season game Hugo Bueno did, but like you said, he's not really taken the mantle on. But with the season that Ryan at Norwich had, it's been really difficult for him. Whether he's still got a future for Wolves in the after this summer, Hugo Bueno will be up to Gary O'Neill with the sort of system that we play in regards to sort of Ryan at Norwich hybrid left wing back, go and do whatever the fuck you want, Algerian superstar role has been given. It's going to be tough for Hugo Bueno to get back in, isn't it? But yeah, it'd be interesting to see what happens to that. Arsenal ended up winning the game 2-0. Thanks to a late Martin Odegaard finish, which was a bit deflating, really, because I don't think we've already mentioned it, that Arsenal possibly could have went through the gears a little bit more, but 2-0 was a bit flattering on the med.
Yeah, I think it flattered them. That was, again, only because we were pushing to try and get something out at the end of the game. That goal wouldn't have happened at 0-0, because those spaces just wouldn't have been there. No, it's a good finish too. The way it breaks to him, also lucky. I think there's an element of luck to both goals that they scored yesterday. But no, I think it's a good finish. But the 2-0 didn't. It's one of those classics, the football cliche of it didn't. It flattered them, I think, 2-0. I don't. They didn't. Maybe they didn't get out of gear one or two. But also, I just think we didn't let them. I genuinely think it was quite an emboldening performance last night, I'd say. I think that's a good way for us to go into midweek.
Based on that 2-0 defeat, and it's a bit difficult to give a sort of the man of the match in a defeat, but who got your vote for man of the match, Jeffo?
That's a good question. It's difficult to say. Chirewa, like you said, did everything basis correct, and I think that's could be the making of him in terms of a game. So if I was going to give it to anyone, I'd probably give it either, probably him. I thought he did everything that he needed to without scoring a goal in that game. And that's exactly what we needed from a player when we were in such a difficult position with Cunha being out again.
Who got your vote, Stu?
I mean, next to him for me, I thought Tommy Doyle was great again. I think like you mentioned earlier with Lamina not being there, is it the case because a bit like the Neves situation where he becomes such a massive influence and a massive part of the club that he's a bit intimidating for other people around him? I don't know if that's kind of what happens when you're playing at school, ain't it? Well, the talented kids there, and you don't want to show yourself up in front of them, and you're talking about Premier League football, but you're still talking about people, so it wouldn't surprise me if there's a bit of that in you. But without him there, I thought Tommy Doyle shined yesterday, and I thought he was unlucky. I mean, being forced out wide and putting balls in, not his forte from wide, which he did a couple of times. But I thought he was as good as anyone else on the pitch for me.
Oh, I really don't like disagreeing with these two, but I didn't think Doyle was that good yesterday. Like, genuinely, I thought there was times when he could have looked long. He could have been a bit more instinctive with his passing, and some of the runs from Doherty and Hwang, which weren't seen and weren't taken upon when the chance could have been taken, and we could have been a little bit quicker just with that progression. It fucking annoys me, and it annoyed Hwang because Chani turned around, and he gave him all rounds of fucks on the second one, because too many times he was passing, he was going short and he was just going backwards. And I love that side of his game. The bounce passing that we do that absolutely infuriates everyone around where I sit, where it bounces it wide, it's fantastic. It's exactly what we need. But when he's facing the opposition goal, he's got to be looking to break those lines. Even if it's one or two a game, just try something, just something different.
It just gives it to think about. Take the safety off for me. I think there's... sometimes he just needs to just try that pass. I thought he was tidy last night, but I think Doc and Wang made some runs that he could have. Maybe if we weren't playing Arsenal, who were technically top of the league, he might have tried it. But I thought he was tidy. But I think there are passes there that either he's not seeing yet because he's still new to the team, or I think the safety was on last night with him a little bit.
I just didn't think he saw him.
I think it was his decision making at times. There was a couple of opportunities where he found Doherty a couple of times in the first half with really stretched passing. But then you're thinking that Doherty never really had the acceleration to get past Kivior if he'd have found that pass. It was a difficult one. Like, there was definitely a couple of opportunities where he definitely could have played Doherty over the top with a bit of a curve pass over the top, where Arsenal had tried to step up, but still the lack of Doherty's pace and acceleration, I don't think really would have caused Arsenal much problems in behind. And Hwang still coming back from injury, whether he would have let his legs go if he'd made that pass, is all you know, without hindsight, isn't it really? I think Tommy Doyle did an all right game. I think Bukayo Traore was my man of the match. He was tireless throughout. Don't really remember him giving the ball away much. I thought he really came up well against Declan Rice in that nine figure Arsenal midfield. And yeah, it's just overall, I think he's really give Gary O'Neill further thought on whether he can start again on Wednesday, because I think he's got the legs for it, whereas maybe a lot of our midfield probably haven't got the legs to go again for 90 minutes on Wednesday. We'll look at the league table for a quick moment. Wolves in 11th on 43 points. Crystal Palace, who beat West Ham 5-1 today, currently 7 points behind us in 14th. So it's still possible we can finish in the top half. It's going to be difficult, but my concerns at the moment is where the next win's coming from. Stu, you've been mentioning it for a while now that we might not get a win for the rest of the season. It's not harsh to say with the attacking players that we've got out injured at the moment. Rydat Nouri thankfully came off the bench late on last night and looked pretty lively in the cameo that he did in that right back role that he was in last night. Obviously, Hwang's going to be building his minutes. How long Mateus Cunha's going to be out for is still yet to be seen. And obviously, Craig Dawson's out for the rest of the season, having had to go through a groin surgery this week. But where's your sort of feelings on a top half finish at the moment for you, Ed?
Other than Bournemouth, I'm struggling to see where we pick up a win.
Bournemouth and Luton, two home games in
But we all know what's going to happen. We all know what's going to happen at Luton, so you can write that one off now. If you can sell your tickets back, so that 6 points there, and I think that if we were to win both of those, then I'd imagine there's enough for Chelsea to implode again that this season, that they can't even, you know, smash Everton 6-0 without falling out with each other. So there's always a chance that they drop down.
Chelsea got two games in hand, but one of them's away to Arsenal midweek, so that's going to be difficult for them. But how much energy Arsenal?
Want us to drop from where we are. Basically,
we don't want another Bruno Lage type collapse, do we, Stu, going into the start of next season? I feel that was massively damaging, because we were in the Champions League European in the February under that Bruno Lage first season. It's just, you don't want to be going into next season on the back of a really long running defeat bounce, because the pressure will be on Gary O'Neill after two or three games next season if we've ended this season really badly, Ronnie.
I don't think you will, because people are wise to the fact now that this is nothing to do with Gary O'Neill. None of this is. If their arseholes had actually done their job properly and give him some money. I mean, the thing is that I ain't going to go over it over and over again. But
you just said this fan base is wise?
In terms of there's a percentage of the fan base that have got their eyes wide open now about what this Fosun nonsense is all about. And this esports stadium stuff that's come out today is even worse than ever. But Liam Keane made a great point on the pod the other day that it's 3.5 million per finishing spot in the league. Yeah. They budgeted for 17th, which, fine, whatever, you're being conservative. Even two places more than that, further up the table. I mean, we're not going to finish 15th even without winning another game for the rest of the season, which I doubt very much that we will. So that would have been enough to get someone in. By them pissing about, look how much money it's cost in lost prize money from not getting someone in. And it's not even speculated to accumulate. It's just common sense. But they didn't do it again. And it was the same in the Bruno Lage year. He wasn't backed when we were on top, and then everything fell apart. And it's exactly the same thing again this year. And this is not down to Gary O'Neill. That was kind of down to Bruno in a way, because he had that history of not being able to turn a tide. But again, he'd run the players into the ground. This time, like Gary O'Neill himself said, we've got to start in a starting squad of 19 compared to 25, 26, whatever, of any other team. So when you look at it like that, you think, well, okay, you've done an amazing job with what you've got. And to still be 11th, despite not winning for God knows how long, with actual schoolboys on the bench, he's done a ridiculously amazing job, even just to get us where we are. Will we end up about 14th? Probably. But that's not on him. I think anyone having a go at Gary O'Neill, if we start next season slowly, needs the red checking, because this is not down to him at all.
No, it's not. They've got to recruit smartly in the summer. I've just done the maths. You talked about, is it £3.5 million per place? If you sign a player on a 1-year contract on $100,000 a week, that's $5.2 million. You can get good players for that sort of, I mean, you can get $250,000 a week players.
Exactly.
You've got to recruit smartly. I was never one for playing Football Manager for a long period of time. The first thing I did when I started the game was go into the transfer search and see who had an expired contract. And then you just go for the most luxurious sounding player who's got a bit of experience, bit of ability that's not over the hill. And you just said you've got to recruit smartly. We still need a number nine. But I don't really know where else on the pitch that we need to upgrade. We'll have the conversation about upgrading Jose Sarr, but the money that it's going to cost Wolves to upgrade on Jose Sarr is probably going to wipe out half of our budget. I saw us linked to Aaron Ramsdale via Sun Sport this morning, or may have been yesterday. The amount of money Arsenal are going to want for Aaron Ramsdale is probably going to be minimum £30 million. Even if we sell Neto and João Gomes this summer for big money, we ain't spending £30 million on a goalkeeper, are we?
No. I think
not Aaron Ramsdale.
The only goalkeeper, the only way this is going to work is if Sar does go to Saudi Arabia for some ridiculous money. That is the only way it's going to work. But even then, you're going to need what? I think 15 million is pushing it. He's been here a while. I know we got him cheap anyway, but still, for what he is, his age, his experience, he's not Portugal's number one. 15, 20 million from Saudi Arabia, maybe. Maybe Neves doing us another favour over there. But even then, you're spending, I mean, how much did that clown Trafford go to Burnley for? I'm sure that was around about 15. So you're not going to get anyone unless you drop lucky like we did with Sarr in the first place. You're not going to get anyone anywhere near what he is. And yeah, he's a calamity a lot of the time, but it's not every week like some people make it. It's like one in six games he does something mental that actually leads to anything. I heard someone yesterday moaning that when he kicked the ball out of play, and you think, okay, so you want your goalkeeper to have 100% pass completion now. And yeah, it's annoying, but every single player misplaces a pass. It's just a fact. I don't understand it. But there's the England under 21 keeper, Sam Tickle, who I've mentioned in the group chat quite a few times at Wigan. He's incredible. He's superb. But you're going to jump from League One to the Premier League, and you could have a Trafford Part 2 situation on your back. So for experience, for someone who's not over the hill, it's not like Rui, where Rui's on ridiculous money. He'd started to kind of wind down a little bit in this country as well in terms of his performance, and he kind of needed to leave. And fair play, he's gone on and he's done great things in Italy. But you're right, if we don't have the money, you don't upgrade him. Simple as that.
You mentioned Trafford there, and this is a completely off-topic segment, but it would have been interesting to see how Burnley would have fared this season if Muric would have played the majority over Trafford. I know he had a bit of a mare, was he against Liverpool or Chelsea the other week, that Muric where...
Well, he did one at Everton, and then he did one against Brighton. So he's done two in a week.
He did the bounce, didn't he? Yeah.
Yeah, anyway, up Burnley. those results yesterday, Brentford winning 5-1 at Luton, Burnley winning 4-1 at Sheffield United. If anyone's got either of them results on the Sky Sports Super 6, you're playing on a different universe to me, because those results really shocked me. I thought Luton might get something at home to Brentford. And to be honest, I was back in Sheffield United to beat Burnley at home at Bramall Lane yesterday. So for Burnley to win 4-1, was a bit shocking. The results from today, if you're not aware, Everton 2, Nottingham Forest 0. Nottingham Forest had a bit of a heads-gone moment on social media after the game, having three penalty decisions go against them, which VAR didn't provide them with a decision that they were looking for. Aston Villa ran out 3-1 winners at home to Bournemouth. Crystal Palace absolutely slapped West Ham 5-2 after West Ham's Thursday night defeat at home to... Sorry, draw at home to... draw, wasn't it? 1-1.
Yeah,
1-1. 1-1. And then, Liverpool joined Arsenal back on top of the league, apart from goal difference, with a 3-1 win away at Fulham. Looking to Wednesday, guys. Do you want to talk about that Forest game for a quick moment, Stu? Because I know you were sort of adamant that at least one of the penalties should have been given, but strong case for all three.
I mean, the handball is outrageous. I mean, his arm, the whole thing of, oh, your arm's in the wrong place. His arm is out. It's like horizontal to his body. And we saw it given literally last week for Man United against Bournemouth, when it was much closer to the body, but the movement of the shoulder was towards the ball. That's exactly what happened in this one. And the look on Ashley Young's face straight away, he said, yeah, he knew. He knew full well that should have been given by VAR. Referees can't see everything, fine. But to have the chance to review it, and again, they didn't send him to the monitor, which it was an obvious mistake. Ridiculous. Utterly ridiculous. The other two... The one that looked a bit like a trip was exactly the same as what Huang got penalised against Newcastle for, which they then said was a mistake. So you kind of said, well, okay, if we're not giving them any more, then you can't give that one. The other one, I could understand it not being given, but at the same time, you'd be annoyed if it wasn't. But they had one absolute nailed-on penalty not given to them. But like has been circulated all afternoon, them celebrating John Moss's ineptitude at the playoff final and how they got away with it last season, and celebrating the fact that they were on the right side of a VAR call. It's just karma. Back right at you, scumbags. But then to put that out, it's one of the best things I've ever seen in my entire life. Unreal.
I hadn't seen that Steve Cook video of him thanking John Moss at the playoff parade. It's like... I mentioned this in another WhatsApp group. It felt like football was repairing itself with the travesty of those decisions that Forest could have had today. You mentioned the first one on Gioran. I hadn't really considered the similarity to Wang's against Newcastle, which they came out and said was wrong after the game. Easily could have been a penalty. I said in our WhatsApp group, I don't think anyone really wants any of the penalties given, really. I think they were all could have been given, but I don't think anyone wants them to be given. I think there has to be some form of criteria that justifies a penalty due to how, you know, the severity of what a penalty brings. I don't think any of them really was a penalty. I mean, the handball's really harsh. I think isn't he like turning up, having cut the balls crossed over his head?
I mean, it's like the FA Cup one though, isn't it? It's proximity seems to have been completely obliterated from the rules now. And we got to start the season, it was, oh yeah, there's your loophole, you're not getting it if you're too close. And now, who gives a fuck, you do what you want. So let's just be consistent with these things. Everything's broken, everything's all messed up. But at least be consistent, and they're just not, are they, ever?
Now, this is the problem. There is an ongoing clamour for the abandonment of VAR, but we're so far down the rabbit hole now that I think we need to start importing VAR officials from other countries, because the claims that we've got within our circus of the Premier League just obviously isn't working. What did you think to any of the decisions from the Everton or FA Cup semi-final, Ed?
Anything that makes Man United struggle is fine by me. But in terms of the Everton game, I think... all three of them I don't even know if we're using this phrase anymore, but none of them seemed clear and obvious to me personally. I think I get what Steve's coming from the handball, and I think on reflection that probably is handball, but it's also not really what I want to see from a football game being decided by whether or not it's a perceived handball. You know, does he know what he's doing exactly? It's not like he's, you know, the handball rule was brought in to stop it being slapped away, wasn't it? And that's not, we've gone so far away from that now. It's it's ludicrous. And I think what you just said there, Dan, in terms of we are so far down the rabbit hole with VAR, we just need to make it work. And whether or not we're going to, I don't know. But I think Forest have gone, their heads have gone, and they've gone to this weird, the VAR guy's a Luton fan, so therefore it's all a complete conspiracy. It's, we are, I mean, they've been drinking their own Kool-Aid, haven't they? I think that's the phrase. And they've just like completely and utterly lost it on whatever Nottingham moonshine is. It's, you don't tend to see it from the club itself. You tend to see it from the fan bases and the fact the club have come out. I don't know what options they're planning to do. I know Clattenburg works there now for whatever reason. When he's not busy on Gladiators, he's there, isn't he? But I don't get it. Don't get it. I don't get what he does. And it's hilarious. I'm not on social media, so I only see it through you guys on the group chat. But heads have gone at Forest, and my only hope is that they go, to be honest.
Yeah, looking at those relegation places, Nottingham Forest on 26 points, Luton on 25, Burnley with that big win away at Sheffield United on 23. I still think it's going to be those bottom three that go down. Who's joining Sheffield United for you, Jeffo?
I think you're probably right. I think Burnley are gone for all the fight in the world. They've got four games left. A team in that position, if they're even averaging a point a game, they're only just going to come level with Forest. So it's an impossible uphill task, really. It's Luton versus Forest, really, for that last place. And it just depends. It's a straight shooter, whoever gets the better results. And it's going to be tough. I really hope that Forest go down because them and Everton, the way that they've acted with the rules this year, and I know they've had points deductions through. Just the attitude towards, okay, we'll just throw money at signings and this wanting to just, okay, we can do whatever the fuck we want because the league will just maybe just give us a few points here and there. It's just been deplorable, really. And I don't want clubs like that in the league, and I want people who want to do it the right way. And it's been a romantic idiot and romantic fool that I am towards football. But I want teams like Luton to still be around because Rob Edwards has done a fantastic job with the players that he's got. And I want to see them get another chance to try and improve next year. And I want to see how they get on. Whereas Forest, I couldn't give a shit about. As you said earlier in the group chat, Stu, the Bolton of the 2020s, because that's all they are. They're just a bunch of has-beens who signed up big money. I mean, they had Keylor Navas last season, for fuck's sake. And he's not been good for 5 years.
And the whole faux rivalry, I mean, the vast majority of people were quite pleased with them getting promoted again and seeing them back in the Premier League, because last time around, like 20-odd years ago or whatever it was, they were fine. It was like, okay, the other club thing, and it's the whole story behind it all. And they were the Van Hooijdonk situation, and it was all very sad. But then to come back, try all the talk about them making Europe within 2 years, and just the bravado and the arrogance of it all. It's just, well, you literally do reap what you sow, and you can't just go around, literally in his case, throwing his weight around and behaving like they have without getting some kind of punishment. And they should have had everything thrown at them. And they got away lightly with the amount of points they got took off.
Yeah.
And if they think they're going to get them points back now after the way they've behaved, I mean, I hope it would be the best thing ever if they either give them another 2 points for bringing the game into disrepute or fine them significant enough money that it affects their calculations for next year and they get to do them again. That'd be amazing.
I'm still baffled that they got given a points deduction on the basis that they would agree to cooperate, and less than a week after agreeing to cooperate, they've appealed the decision.
There's
no cooperation there. It's throw the book at them.
It's arrogance.
And their ticketing situation this week was mad, wasn't it? Some tickets going from, was it £190 to £850 based on a age bracket difference, was it?
Yeah. Yeah, because I think that there was, because they do a thing where it's youth tickets from 12 to 19, which is nice that they do 19, but there's no like step up thing. There's no like a young people or the student bracket where it's like 19 to 21 and then step up. So they put the prices up. So you're going, you are going from the guy who was 19 moving to 20, going from an artificially low price to then one that's massively overpriced for what they've been paying for the last few years. It's just, again, they think they're something that they're not after a year and a half of scratching around trying to stay up. It's just bizarre, the whole thing. And to put the kids' prices more than anything else, I mean, 90 quid to 190 in the space of a year, nah. It just stinks, the whole place does.
Let's quickly look to the midweek fixture between Wolves and Bournemouth on Wednesday, 7:45 p.m. kickoff. I'll put the team lineup back up for a few seconds. Any sort of changes that you'd suggest, if any or all of Fitzgerald?
I mean, it all depends. I think Doherty can't play, can he, really, realistically? Even if that means playing Aitnuri at right back, which I know it's no actual difference playing two left backs instead of two right backs on the same pitch, but it just feels wrong because I can't remember it ever happening before anywhere. But I think that's got to be your number one point to switch things up. I thought midfield, like we said, we're okay. But there's just nothing up front, is that? That's the problem. So hopefully Cunha's fit, because I mean, that's the thing. Do you go balls deep on planning for Luton and then think, oh yeah, we beat them in pre-season, we're going to do them again? And then there's the Wolves factor against bad teams, where we all know what happens there. Or do you say, okay, you can play Cunha from the start, take him off at half-time, play Wang the second half, and kind of muddle through and try and get a win that way? Because I don't think we've got much options otherwise.
I'm still doubtful whether Cunha will be available on Wednesday. I would have thought if he's had some form of scan on a kick to the calf and there has been some sort of damage, then Wednesday might come a bit too soon for him.
Yeah, I'm just going off what Gary O'Neill said, it might happen. So, but then again, he could be playing it like he did for the Coventry game.
I'm getting to the point now where, how do I even word it? Gary O'Neill's pre-match press conferences either aggravate me or really deflate me. It all goes back to that Coventry FA Cup semi-final pre-match presser, the alluding that Cunha was available. Neto or Bellegarde was hinted at might be in the squad. It just felt like if he would have just thrown his cards on the table and said, all these players are out, we need your support more than ever because we're literally down to Nathan Fraser playing up front. We might have gone to that stadium with a bit of an underdog mentality and we might have been able to drive us over the line. And it's all hindsight now, isn't it? But I feel like his management of some pre-match and post-match press conferences, because he's mentioned previously, hasn't he, with injuries to Neto and Huang, that their injuries don't seem to be as bad as they were, and Huang ended up being out for 6-8 weeks, whatever it was. Neto was out for a good while. I think he needs to either start trusting his medical team a bit more, or he needs to just be a lot more coy than what he has been, because it's, like I said, I think some of his interview methods have been a bit suspect. Am I out of line there at all?
No, he's still raw for me. I think we talk about some of our young players being raw, and he's still getting used to playing the media, right, and playing the game. And the game's the game sometimes, and he's just probably saying things as a footballer of a certain ilk from a certain era, where you kind of, maybe you did play with a few more knocks than they do now, and he looks at it and goes, that's like walking wounded, we can play on that. And medical treatments now are saying you don't. And I think maybe he just isn't, he's not used to yet playing the game with making sure you tell the media either exactly what you need to tell them or nothing. And fill the gaps. So that's the one place he still, for me, needs to work on. I think we need to. There's a disconnect between what he says and what actually happens on a match day sometimes. And I think he's probably still just learning that. He's what, 1.5 seasons into being a manager.
I don't know if you guys remember. I think it may have been after might have been the lead up to the Man United first game of the season, or maybe the week after, we had Johnny Phillips on the show. And I was in a massively underwhelmed mindset of Gary O'Neill at the time. And I said to the panel at the time that, you know, even if Gary O'Neill does have an okay season, are Wolves, Fosun going to trust him with a war chest? He's earned a war chest for me now. I think Johnny Phillips' stance at the time was, we'll come to that bridge when we get there. But
we don't think he's.
Yeah, Fosun not providing a war chest either way, are they? It's all based on whatever we can sell this summer and you'll get a cut of that. My concern is, I wouldn't mind Neto going. If the money was right, it's Ryan Aitnori and João Gomes for me. I think we need to be, and Cunha as well. I don't think anyone's going to pay the money that Wolves would want as a minimum for Cunha. He's had a good season. I think his injury about recently has probably scuppered him a big move if someone did come in for him. But, you know, we paid like over £40 million for him last year, so no one's really going to spend that on Cunha this summer. It's Ryan Aitnori and João Gomes for me that we need to sort of build our team on in the summer, Stu.
Yeah, I mean, going on what Hobbsy said about this, that they're going to go at some point. So let's at least get another year out of them before one or both of them go. And you look at the whole thing with Aitnori, he's got his injury problems. His fitness has been questionable up until halfway through this season when he could finally manage to get through an entire game, which he hadn't been able to do for the entire time he'd been here before that. João Gomes is just, he is what he is. He's excellent. He's not going to be here for more than, I'd imagine, next season's the last one, and we play it like that. I mean, Cunha, the pair of Sung itself will keep Cunha here for a few years, you'd think. I mean, that was one thing that we haven't, nearly an hour in, that we haven't even touched on, the atmosphere in that Sung got everyone kind of chirped up when everyone was in a bit of a low point. And that atmosphere needs to come back. I know it's Wednesday night and it's against Bournemouth, who'll probably be about 10 people and a horse, but you ain't, and normally it's dead as anything in them kind of games. But the whole, like you said earlier, the whole backs to the wall underdog mentality, which we are going to have if people like it or not against Bournemouth, that's a fact. It's going to have to be volume up, because we've got very few players left. And if we can get people singing songs for players who are not even there, that's going to play into their mentality as well, long term, about who's going to stay here or not. So I know it's just a job from them, and they're mercenaries, or they'll go for money. But it didn't for Neves. I know he's an outlier and things are different, but Neto, I couldn't care less, really. If we get 40 million, I would take it now, because you can't. What is the point in keeping him here again when you know he's going to break down? You know he's going to miss at least half of the season on the treatment table at best. It takes him a while to get back up to speed. Then we have a month, 6 weeks of him being excellent, and then he falls apart again. Just cut our losses, get rid, get some money in, and have another season of Aitnori and João Gomes, and everyone will be happy.
I just can't let him go for £40 million, even with his injury record. I've mentioned this before. Look at the players that have gone for twice that amount. Jadon Sancho, Antony, Mudryk, even being out for 25% of the season, he's still doing more goal contributions than them three that I've just mentioned. We can't let Neto go for less than 55 million pounds for me. He's still contracted to 2027. And even like you just said there, Stu, even if he breaks down and he's only able to play 70-75% of the season, he's still a player that we can benefit from as a club. But I wouldn't, like I said, I've said from the outset that I'm not fussed if he goes this summer, but he needs to be for the right money. It has to be. He's too much of a commodity. You look at the goal contributions that he's got for Wolves, it was similar to Jota. His goal contributions double in a better side. We've got to get the right money for him. Do you want to wake your kids up and do a rendition of that song, Stu, or shall I play the pre-recorded version?
I think the pre-recorded version would be better. And okay. The fact that you expect them to be asleep at 9 o'clock is a non-parent thing to say. So yes, play the play that.
Go on then.
Let's go!
It was a good rendition that went on for a long, long time last night. It was quite funny for a good 5 minute period of people asking what they're singing.
Yeah.
Trying to work what's the second verse? Could you find out what it is? Because it was just Mateus Cunha's on my mind and he's scoring all the time. And then he was just do what did he for about a good 10 minutes. Everyone knew the do what did he be.
Yeah.
But everyone looking puzzled for the rest of the song was quite funny to watch. It was only earlier on today that I found out what the second verse was. I think we could do a bit better than he looks good, he looks fine, but you know, he's got great teeth, and I've said before, he's got big ears, but the suit his head magnificently. He's a lovely man, Mateus Cunha is.
Yeah.
Should we talk about the other song that got sang by the South Bank last night, which I found rather funny? Fair play to Ben White. He clapped back to it, but yeah, it was funny. Let's give it a quick listen. It's classic Wolves, really, when the game's a bit meh. You need a bit of something just to spur you on, taking the piss out of Ben White and his fake and his prime Wolves, and then follow a few chants of England due to his ongoing spat with Gareth Southgate. I mean, there was even the other song, wasn't that? Southgate's right, Ben White's shite. Was another nice little moment in a game. Like I said, it wasn't really much pleasurable for the home side last night. I'll go through a few of the comments. Your friend Stu still with the commented, pray Neto stays fit for the first half of next season. Babium and Sell High in January. Danny Pears commented a lot during this episode. I'm sorry I've not been able to give much output. I think the main comment was four extremely poor Fancastrians, four reactions not given, simply cannot accept. Let's just say I'm considering my podcast options. There's a good American one called A Whole Lot of Wolves, Danny. I'm sure you'll listen to that when you're not on it yourself. Still with the talking about Luton, they legit stink. He commented, I know everyone likes Luton more than the other dregs, but 25 points from 34 games stinks, and so does 75 goals conceded. I've mentioned it in a few WhatsApp groups. Luton have put up a good fight, but they're still just not picking up anywhere near enough results to get out of this relegation battle that we're in. Yeah, it's been a difficult season for Luton. I think the only thing that we've got going for us, which makes it even more inevitable that we're going to get beat by Luton, is we've got a lot of players out injured at the moment. But yeah, we'll come to that bridge on Saturday after the Bournemouth midweek. Danny P saying goalkeeper position is not a priority for me. He follows it with, I absolutely hate Aaron Ramsdale, but the chance to see Stu's reaction when Ramsdale balls up a back pass into his own net might just be worth the price of an admission plus a plane flight. What else have we got in the comments section? Chris Rogers thought Boubacar Traore was excellent. Gary O'Neill, this team needs to be supported to give them the confidence to believe they are a top-half team and not just a team punching. Yeah, thanks for everyone who's joined us in the comments section tonight on the Wolves Fancast match reaction with myself, Jeff L, Stu and Ed. One more repeat of the charity match that we've got coming up on Friday the 24th of May on behalf of the mental health charity Mind. We'll be playing against a lot of other podcast, YouTube, TikTok content creators from other Premier League sides. We've got a few from Arsenal, Liverpool. We've got a Nottingham Forest fan. There's a Villa fan who we've begrudgingly invited this time. It's going to be a good event. If you can come down to Money, there will be spectators, tickets available close to the time. But like I mentioned earlier, if you can donate to our fundraiser on behalf of the Mental Health Charity Mind, you can find it at justgiving.com/page/WolvesFancastCCC24. Before we leave tonight, because I'm looking forward just to finishing this episode, because I'm stuck on a few TV series at the moment. Free Body Problem, Baby Reindeer. Where are you looking at in regards to TV series at the moment, Stu, for the people who want to skate away from Wolves for a moment?
I've got two episodes left of Baby Reindeer, and that's it's an experience in itself. Three Body Problem, done that, finished that. I've got three episodes left of Fallout, which has surprised me how good that actually has been. But if you want to be, if you want to go a bit deeper, go Shogun on Disney Plus, which is 60% of the episode is subtitled in Japanese, so it might not be for everyone. And you got people speaking English, but they're actually speaking Portuguese in the show, so it's a bit odd. But it's excellent. So yeah, TV wise, that's what I've been. Oh, and I watched Homicide New York just for a laugh, like you do. But yeah, with Champions League and stuff, it's been more football based, and obviously Nick Cage films. And I watched The Neverending Story again for the first time in years. And you'll find that episode of Cage Fighting out on Tuesday.
There you go. There's your plug.
It's actually, I hadn't watched it for about 25 years, easily. Neverending Story. And it wasn't as bad as I remember. I thought it was going to be terrible, but I enjoyed it quite a lot.
What are you watching at the moment, Ed?
Well, I've just started Baby Reindeer and Fallout, so I don't want to repeat everything she just said, because I'm sure we'll cover it better on Cage Fighting. So they're the two on. But this week, it's been pure football. Pure football all this week, and I've not started anything new for a while.
When you've not got Fire Ambiance videos behind you, Jeff, what are you watching?
I literally have no idea what you're talking about with Baby, any of these things. I actually don't watch television. I watch Fire and esports. I'm a big esports guy, so I'm just watching Valorant esports tournaments at the moment and just that sort of thing. I don't generally watch any TV, which made me look like a complete weirdo now, but I've already done that before.
So. You're consistent, Jeff. I'll give you that.
Yeah.
Thanks for joining us on tonight's Wolves Fancast. I'm going to end it with the final comments tonight, because he's thinking what we're all saying. Belfast is beautiful. Hoping to meet my first single mom tomorrow. Good night, guys. Enjoy the rest of your week. We'll see you after the Bournemouth match. Please continue to follow Wolves Fancast. Drop a like before you leave. Have a good week. Take care, everyone.